Well, let me certainly express a thank you for all of those who are here tonight. As was mentioned, there are members who've been here just every night that they could be here, and that means a lot to a visitor like me and my daughter, and it's been great getting to know you better. As this week starts to wind down, I really treasure that, the relationships that we built. And we have visitors here, some for the first time tonight, and that means a lot to us too. We're thankful that you've come. There are a lot of things that you do love, and there are a lot of things that you could have given that love and affection towards tonight. But tonight, for this hour, you chose God and His Word and His people to love more, and that means a lot. I'd like to begin tonight with a statistic. It is most recently reported that 60% of all Americans, it's a lot of people, 170 million Americans are familiar with the four icons that used to be on the left over there and aren't there all of a sudden. Are social networking active? Facebook, Twitter, all of these different accounts like Instagram. You follow people on Twitter accounts, or you're LinkedIn connecting with other business folks, or you get your favorite recipes off of Pinterest. It turns out that most Americans are somehow connected to this social networking web that has made the world a very small place. So as we begin tonight, I kind of want to test that number, 60%, a little bit over half, and I want to test it with the room tonight. So I've kind of looked over about how many we have tonight. If you are here with us in this room and you do not have any social networking account at all, you've never been on Facebook, you don't know what it means to tweet, you're not following Jimmy Fallon, you haven't gotten any recipes or Christmas ideas off of Pinterest, you are unplugged. I want you to proudly, perhaps, raise your hand for us. All right, come on. All right, don't worry. We won't make fun of you. Someone will come over and take a photo of you and post it to Facebook, but you won't know it. Let me see them again. All right, 1, 2, 3, 5. You know what I think I'm looking at? About 75% of us do. And about 25% here do not. So we're a little bit over the national average in the room tonight. Now let me just say this as we move forward in this study, as we talk more about what social networking is. This lesson is for the 75% who do have social networking accounts. While God nor Abraham Lincoln ever said anything about the internet, the Bible does give us information about how to manage all of our relationships, whether they be digital, maybe even more so, in the digital world and the way people behave. So it's for us. I'm one of those as well. I have a Facebook account. My daughter has an Instagram account. We're answering the question tonight, are we good people or bad people? Because we have those things. So that's for us. But this lesson is also for the 25% of you who raise your hand. Because sometimes you're kind of mean to us. Like we're just really bad people wasting hours of our lives. Well, we might be. We might be. But we need to dig into that a little more deeply. Now, just to make sure that all 100% of us are on the same page, let me tell you a little bit about what we mean when we use the term social networking. It's more than just a Facebook account. There's Snapchat and any number of social ways of interacting. But here's the basic gist of how it works. There's three steps to all online social networking. Step one, you get to create a profile about you. Everybody loves to create profiles about themselves. You tell us where you were born, where you live. You upload pictures about what's going on or what you had for dinner last night or what you had for dinner tonight. You tell us everything you want the world to know about you, what you think, what you feel, what you like or don't like. You get to create that information and update it daily online. Now, if it's just you who sees it, that's no fun. You've put all this information together and you want other people to see it. So step two, you start sharing that information with folks. You're sharing it with your family and friends at first. So your Facebook account starts with 10 friends. And then 10 strangely becomes 100. And then 100 in my case becomes 1,556 people. I don't even know that many people. But I am friends with that many people. So what starts as, I just want to share a few pictures with my family. I want to post a few quick things about what's going on with me. Instagram photo of somewhere we visited today. All of a sudden, hundreds of other people get to see it. And somehow it kind of makes you feel good about yourself. Like, I get to share me with lots of other folks. But if it was just you sharing yourself with other folks, the rest of us would get bored. So you also get their information too. All 1,556 of my Facebook friends have created their own profiles. So they're sharing information. So I am giving a lot and I am getting a lot. Maybe you follow some celebrities and every time they do something new and take a picture or something new happens in their life, you get to hear about it. So this is the basic way that social networking works. It's basically real life, except on a computer screen. And when you speak, many, many more people hear you all at once. And you can sit in your own living room and hear many, many more people than you've ever heard or seen before. Now, we're going to talk about ways to manage this as if to see if this is really God's plan for us to be involved in something like this. But before we do, there they are. Welcome, little Tweety bird. Before we do that, what we want to look at are some universal standards. There are some things that God has shared with us that will help us in every relationship that we have. I want you to look at the next three things in the Bible verses we will be reading. And we're going to begin in Matthew chapter 6. We want to hear the words of Jesus himself. And you know that when Jesus sat down on the side of a mountain, there was no cell service, no internet. It didn't work that way. But still, people communicated with other people. So what we're going to talk about are what are some universal standards that should always apply no matter who or how we're interacting with others. And the neat thing about these three things is that most of us learned them when we were really, really little. If you were raised in some religious home or going to church, I'm not going to surprise you at all with the next three things you see pop up on the screen behind me. What should surprise us all is that people forget to apply them in all of these different relationships. Here's the first thing that needs to always be in place no matter what we're doing. Number one, we always have to be careful, little eyes, what we see. I'm going to tell you right now, you can master the internet with just point number one. You should not look at everything. Not all images provided, not all pictures that are laid before your eyes are there for your feasting. We must be disciplined enough to realize that even if it's a, and I'm going to use a lot of air quotes tonight, a friend posting something that they're involved in, that doesn't mean that I have the right to look at it, and that doesn't mean that it's right. Jesus talked about being careful with what we see in Matthew chapter 6, verses 22 and 23. In Matthew 6 and 22, he said this, "The eye is the lamp of the body. So then, if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness?" When I read these two verses, I think about a house with windows. When light comes through the windows, guess what's in the house? Light. When there's no light and there's simply darkness outside and in the windows, then the inside of the house is dark. What he's saying is, whatever you want going on the inside is largely going to be dependent on what you let come through the windows. What comes through the windows gets into the house every time. And so God's people need to be aware that if I want a soul that thinks on right things and wholesome things, there's not things on the internet and in person that I should not be looking at. And when we're willing to discipline ourselves and just say no, we don't have the right to do such, we can take better control of the kind of things that we think about. It reminds me of Job. You remember when Job was going through all of his turmoil and strife, and his friends kept saying, "You must be doing something wrong." And in Job 31, Job said, "I have made a covenant." You remember that verse? "I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then," Job said, "could I gaze upon the virgin? You're accusing me of immoral thinking, immoral behavior. I can't think immorally because I'm not letting that image come through the window so it doesn't live in the house." We can get great control over our social networking when we realize that there are some friends we don't need to have as friends. And there are some links that don't need to be clicked and some videos that don't need to be watched, because if we want to guard what's inside of us, we need to guard what we're viewing. You could turn in your Bibles with me over to Philippians 4 and look at a similar idea. When I read Philippians chapter 4, it illuminates in verse 8 the kind of things that I need to be thinking about. There are things that I want going on in my mind all day, and I don't want anything to interrupt that. So Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8 makes this great list. Whatever is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence, if anything worthy of praise, dwell or think on these things. So here's my question for you, and if you answer correctly, we can move on to the next point and get this thing really going. Can I think on good things if I am viewing bad things? Can I do it? You cannot do it. Everybody go like this. Can't do it. It's not physiologically possible. God built us so that this leads to this and they'll always be connected. So number one is, I just need to say no at things that I view and be willing to cut those things off. Any guesses on what might come next? Anybody remember the children's song? Be careful, little eyes. But do you also realize that we don't need to hear everything? We don't need to know what everybody thinks and hear what everybody has to say. The internet is filled with drama. People pouring forth things that they shouldn't be telling anyone, and there we are just lapping it up and hearing it. And somehow we think that because it's typed instead of spoken, I can just feast on all of it that I want and it won't have the same effect. But it does. We need to be careful at the things that we are reading and hearing. I stay right here in Philippians 4 and 8 to make my point. Things that are, do you see the list? True and honorable. If I want to think on things that are true, I don't need to hear lies. If I want to think on things that are honorable, I don't need to read something that is dishonorable, something that is disrespectful, something that is profane. And is it even possible for me to feast my eyes on literature that is negative and still remain positive? Practically no. Be careful, little eyes, what you read, what you hear, and what you see. Ephesians chapter 5, please. To some degree, we don't have control over this. You may work somewhere where people are saying things that they should not say. You may work or go to school somewhere where profanity is all around you and there's only so much of it you can eliminate from your life. But I'm here tonight to encourage you, just because there's some of that you can't get away from doesn't mean you shouldn't try. I think sometimes we think that because people curse at school, I can watch R-rated movies. Because people talk about things that are illicit and immoral at school, I can view illicit and immoral things on the internet or feast on things that my friends are sharing or look at images. That's not a disciple's way of living. In Ephesians chapter 5, please, in verse 3, but immorality or any impurity or greed must not even be named among you as is proper among the saints. Now notice verse 3. It's not just saying I shouldn't be the one saying it and doing it. It's saying, I don't even want these things around me. I don't want to see things around me that damage my thinking, and I don't want to hear things that take me down. He goes on to say, verse 4, there must be no filthiness and silly talk, coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know with certain that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Verse 11. Do not participate. I think that one we know. Okay, I'm not supposed to participate in things that are illicit, profane, immoral. But look at the rest of verse 11. Instead, even expose them. If I read something on the internet and it comes through some social networking site because some friend has said it or someone else has posted it, I have two choices. I want you to be really clear on this tonight. You've got two choices. You can respond to them and expose it for what it is, and hopefully they'll do better. Or you can detach yourself from it and not hear it again. Those are the only two choices. God's people do not continue to feed on things that tear them down in hopes that somehow they'll stand in the face of it. Three things to get us going. Universal standards. Be careful what you see. Be careful what information comes in. And then, oh, by the way, you also are sharing you with the world. Just as important as it is to filter what you're getting from others, please, for the sake of us all, filter the things that you share with other people. Unfortunately, at our congregation in Dowlin Road, there have been too many people who've had to go into the elder's office and have conversations with the shepherds, not because they got upset about something, not just because they misunderstood something or took something the wrong way, but because as soon as they did those things, they went straight to Facebook and told everybody they knew. They made a huge mistake. And sometimes when you cut that pillow open and the feathers fly down the street, even when you realize you're wrong, you can't catch all the feathers and put them back. I need to be careful with what I am expressing to others. Ephesians, you're already there. Turn back to chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 25 and 26. Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth, each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry, and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity. Now, if you're one-on-one with somebody, forget computer screens and cell phones and the internet. You're just one-on-one with somebody. This verse still stands. You might get angry with each other. You need to work it out in a respectful kind of way. And if you go too far and you lash out at them, or you go down to verses 31, you express some bitterness or wrath or anger or clamor or slander with them, that's a sin, isn't it? But how do you make it right? You go to that one person and you say, I shouldn't have expressed myself that way. I apologize. How do we move on? Sometimes hard to do, but it can be done. But when you tweet something to the world about something you're frustrated about, a lot of people have lost their jobs over this, and I think maybe rightly so. Taking information and reacting poorly, the social networking, remember, it's not just you and your five friends anymore. It quickly turns into dozens and even hundreds. We need to be someone, verses 31 and 32, who do not let anger and being upset find its way out of us into the world around us. Instead, verse 32, be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ has forgiven us. Reminded of James 3. Everybody knows James 3 about the tongue, right? We really know this verse well when we're talking about the other person. The other person just needs to stop. They need to stop and think about what they're saying and the trouble that they're causing. How many of you guys know that James 3 is not for the other person? Is it okay if I say that? James 3 is actually for you. Or if I'm reading James 3, it's for me. How many of you guys realize that when James 3, 5, and 6 talks about the tongue, it doesn't actually mean the words. It means you expressing yourself to people around you, which makes the internet an even dangerous, more dangerous place because of how many will hear you in an instant. Isn't it just amazing how quickly you can share information? You can send it out, and it's literally on the other side of the world within seconds, milliseconds even. It's there. Be careful with the things that we say. So, this applies to every relationship. This will make your marriage better. This will make things better for you at work. The three things we learned when we were 2 years old are God's way of improving all of our relationships, and we should start there. But tonight we're talking about social networking. All right, here's the good news. If we've got these 3 points down, are we cool with this? 3 points? Now we can talk about some positive stuff. One of our questions for the week is social networking evil? Well, in the absence of these things, what's the answer? Yeah. If you're not willing to observe these 3 things, it's absolutely detrimental. But taking for granted that all 75% of us who have accounts are going to be much, much more careful with what we do, I got some great news. I want to share with you that there are some outstanding opportunities with social networking. We are able to accomplish things. We'll get there in a sec. Just one. All right. There are some things we can accomplish that evangelists and people who love God and family members only dreamed of just a generation ago. So here are 3 things to consider. First of all, if you're in a social networking relationship with other people, you get to express yourself. Now, that may not always be a good thing, okay? I have a friend who has shown me every single conceivable angle of her Datsun. Every angle. She loves that dog, and she wants me to love all of that dog, okay? You can overexpress yourself. We don't need to know about all the meals. Just eat the thing, okay? Just eat the thing, and later tell me it was good. That's all we need to know. So there's this sense of overexpression, and I think it's kind of warned us away from this a little bit. Like, this is a bad thing because you can share too much. But look, remember, we're going to be careful what we say. And when we do that, I have great news. You get to express to hundreds of people at a time exactly who you are. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing? Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, do you remember the light, this little light of mine, Matthew chapter 5? Take a look over there. Remember when he talked about what our goal is as a disciple? My goal, verse 14, is to be a light to the world. I want to be a city set on a hill that cannot be hidden. Sounds like I want lots of people to see me, in a sense. Nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. We have the opportunity to share with tons of people Christian character. You can post positive things, your attitude, the way that you're dealing with challenges and difficulties in your life. We can show many people what it's like to be a Christian as they sit there and read about your life on a screen. There is a Christian character that we want all people to know about. Open your Bibles to 1 Peter, please, chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2 describes the fact that as Christians, we want to tell our story to others. I'm in 1 Peter chapter 2, and I'm beginning in verse 9. Any opportunity to show people what the Christian life looks like is an opportunity well taken. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9, we're a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a people, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession. Why? Why am I a Christian? So that you may proclaim the excellencies of Him who has called you out of darkness and into marvelous light. Verse 11, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts. Verse 12, keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, they may, because of your good deeds as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. Verse 15, for such is the will of God, that by doing right, you may silence the ignorance of foolish men. If you're active on social networking, I want you to consider it a privilege to get to accomplish this in larger numbers than Christians only dreamed in generations past. In verse 9, you can proclaim the excellencies of God. You can talk about your faith. You can talk about this week and some of the things you've learned or some of the things you're doing. You can talk about your moral stance and who you are. You can correct people just by proclaiming what is right. And look, will everybody like it? No. But they've got a choice too. They can unfriend you just like you can unfriend them. But when people continue to hear the things that we post, we have the opportunity, verse 15, to silence the ignorance of foolish men. So, post. Tell us all about you, but not all about your dog, and not all about your dinner. Tell us about your attitude towards this beautiful day. Tell us about your attitude towards the government. Tell us about your attitude towards the people around you. Tell us about your ideas. What are some things you're working on this year? What are some of your goals? Your spiritual goals. Your personal goals. Tell us about your plans for the future. Expressing ourselves is an excellent tool. And one of the things I've tried to do, I'm only Facebook active, that's my only account, is take at least once a week and just sort of announce something that tells people this is who I am, this is what I want to be in the future. And people hop on board and it encourages others. So three things. First of all, you get to express yourself. Second of all, you get to evangelize the truth. And I just want to challenge and encourage all of our social networking active Christians in the room. Please do not let a single week pass without using your circle of influence to share the truth with other people. Open your Bibles back to Matthew chapter 10. We've read this chapter a couple of times this week already. What we're trying to do tonight and tomorrow night is kind of fold back in some verses that we've been looking at. I get over to Matthew chapter 10. Remember this deal that Jesus has made with us. In Matthew 10, he says it's really very simple. Verse 32 of Matthew 10. Therefore, everyone who confesses me before men, I will also confess him before my Father who is in heaven. You say my name, I say yours. It just doesn't get any simpler than that. I want to tell as many people as possible about my Lord, about what it means to be a Christian, about what He has done for me and what He can do for you, in hopes that the more people I tell about Jesus, the more often He will say my name in the courts of heaven and I will receive His mercy and His grace. Now, verse 33 says that if we deny Him before men, and we talked about this Sunday night, whoever denies me before men, I will also deny him before my Father who is in heaven. What we talked about Sunday night is this doesn't mean just negating my belief in Jesus, denying that I believe in Him. It's the opposite of verse 32. When I am unwilling and I am ashamed to speak of Jesus That is the same thing as all out denying him. Think about heaven's courts for a minute. You don't need Jesus to say something bad about you up there for you to be in trouble. What you need is for him to never mention you. Then you're already in trouble. If Jesus never talks about me and he never mentions me to the Father, then I don't have a relationship with the Father. So take the opportunity to post a Bible verse. How many of you post Bible verses? Put yourself on a once a week. Let me tell you, I've been reading the Bible today, and here's what the Bible said. Now, what are your friends at school going to think? I don't know, but it's going to be awesome. Because they're either going to be offended, and they're going to have to think about why they're offended, or it's going to put their mind on something they have maybe never thought about in the entirety of their lives, something that really actually matters. Let's take these opportunities. I'm in Matthew chapter 10, and I'm just looking down in verse 40. I was thinking about this phrase the other day. I hadn't originally connected this to the idea of confessing Jesus, but I want to run it by you tonight. He who receives you receives me. He who receives me receives him who sent me. I want you to think about that first phrase. He who accepts you, Jesus says to the disciples, accepts me. Here's my challenge for you. However you're connected with the world, your 152 people who follow you on Instagram, is it possible that some of them accept you but don't accept Jesus? Will you think about that a second? They love me. They follow me. They heart like all the stuff that I post. We're really good friends. We share back and forth. But they don't have any respect for Jesus at all. Do you see that that's a problem? I must not be evangelizing right. If people can heart me and like me and support my stuff, but have no love or attraction for the will of God at all. Post things. Share sermons. If you need a place to go, check out DowlinRoad.com. DowlinRoad.com, every Monday morning, we put our sermons up on video. Check them out and then share them. Share them with other people. What if my family members see? What if it offends someone? Look, we're trying to silence foolish men so that they can learn something. But they're not going to learn anything if they don't ever see anything from you. So there are a couple of things we can do that I think are tremendous positives. One, let's tell people about Christian character by posting positive things about ourselves. Secondly, post Bible verses, share good ideas, sermons, and the like. And then thirdly, we get to encourage people. I have some online friends that share too much. You know anybody like that? And I don't mean pictures of their dog. I mean, when they've had a bad day, they just pour it out. They tell you everything that hurts on their bodies. They tell you everybody that's done anything wrong to them. And I'm kind of reading it thinking, what's wrong with these people? Don't they know that it just looks kind of needy when they're pouring everything out there? And sometimes that can help you kind of back up a little bit. But you know what? There is something wrong with them. Or they wouldn't be expressing all that. They are hurting. Something is going poorly for them. I don't ever criticize someone who pours out too much of their emotions on any of these sites. I'm a Facebook person, so on Facebook, because what it is a cry for help. They're saying, I need some encouragement. And as often as they need it, God's people should be willing to give it. So I appreciate, people used to say, oh, I don't like this stuff. People are, there's no filter. They're just pouring their whole lives out there, and they're not hiding anything. That's great. I'm glad they're not hiding anything. I'd rather them say too much and pour too much out there, even if it shows sinful conduct. Better it not be hidden, right? Because now we can go in and encourage them and try to help them and make it better. I appreciate the fact that we have the opportunity to help friends. Open your Bible to Romans chapter 12 for a moment. Some of the descriptions of what God's people do for one another that is expressed to us in Romans 12, the internet gives us more reach than we've ever had before. And the ability to send private messages or post things to try to bring them around in ways that were never imagined. I'm in Romans chapter 12, and I'll just look here, maybe verse 7. There are some things God expects us to do. If you can serve people, serve people. If you can teach people, teach people. If you're somebody who knows how to exhort, really build somebody up, then be the person who builds somebody up. If you can give, give with liberality. If you can lead somebody down the right path, do it with diligence. If you can show mercy, do so with cheerfulness. I think some of us might think, yeah, I would do all that, but I don't know where those opportunities are. When do I really have an opportunity to serve someone or teach them something or pick them up or lead them along? It just doesn't seem like those things appear all the time. You go to your favorite social networking page tonight before you go to bed. And you scroll down the last 10 things your friends have said, and you will find a cry for help in every 10 posts. Somebody needs some help. Somebody needs someone to give them a call, someone to send them a message, someone to go visit them. I think about Romans 12, down about verse 15. Rejoice with those who rejoice. There's going to be a lot of that. But then there's some weep with those who weep. Verse 10, be devoted to one another. Devoted. I look at the internet as this great way of really rejoicing with those who rejoice and weeping with those who weep in wonderful kinds of ways. So I encourage you to do a couple things while we're on the positive page. One is at least once a week, if you're somebody who gets on the internet and does this, at least once a week, post something purely spiritual, something that you're sharing from someone else, a Bible verse or a sermon, at least once a week. Say something about who you are. Not what you like, who you are. Share something about you, share something from God, and reach out and help somebody. Reach out and help somebody. They're crying for it. They're asking for it. And we should be there for them. So I got to tell you, I think the internet's kind of cool for exalting the praise of the glory of God. If we keep our first 3 points in mind, that we can't look at everything, we can't read everything, we can't say everything that's on our mind. But is that the end of the lesson? I mean, is it just all good news? I wish it was all good news. I wish we could just get out there and do these three things and set the world on fire. But we also need to talk about the too much dangers. Beware of the too much. We can take a good thing and turn it into a very harmful thing just by some level of overexposure. So here are the three warnings I would give you tonight about using the internet to communicate with other people. Number one, this is the most obvious, right? It can take up way too much time. We need to monitor our online usage. You know, we do this with our kids. We do this with our 13-year-old and our 10-year-old, but maybe some 35-year-olds could use that, and maybe somebody even older than that could use it. We had an interesting experiment at our congregation last year where we have three guys who preach there. One of them, his name is Ben. His wife, Nikki, is a big Facebook person. And we had actually delivered a lesson like this, and so she just kind of took a yellow pad and documented her hours. She wanted to know, in a given week, how many hours am I on Facebook? That's her social network of choice. 14 hours. That's a part-time job. All right? You can do a lot of good in 14 hours. She was utilizing 14 hours, and to tell you the truth, I think that's on the low end of most of the statistics. You go to a red light, you pull out your cell phone, you check Facebook. You get a lunch break, you pull up your computer screen, you check out the newest things being tagged on Pinterest that you can look at and post on and share with others. We're constantly going to this, and it's taking up too much of our time. Open your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians 5 is a passage we looked at, I believe it was last night. It had to do with the way we're using our time. And in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15, 16, and 17, I want to show you my favorite Bible word.